This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. A very disappointing weekend for the Spartans. We'll talk about that with our friend Graham Couch, who's the columnist for the Lansing State Journal. So let's bring in Graham Couch and talk a little bit about the Spartans' loss to Ohio State. Graham, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Earl. How about yourself?
Hey, doing good. And, you know, we had a difficult game, a tough loss for the Spartans and for the fans. You know, what did you see that you thought? I mean, I know I picked Ohio State to win the game, but primarily because I thought that their quarterback was so superior. And he was. But, boy, that Michigan State line play, I think that needs a lot to be desired. What's your thoughts on Michigan State and how they've lost two games? It looks like the line play hasn't been as well as it could be.
Well, yeah, and they're beat up. If you're talking about the offensive line, they've had some injuries there. And, you know, I thought they played hard. I thought they played fairly well at points. Braxton Miller is better than I even thought he was. I mean, this is not like a Denard Robinson type or a Taylor Martinez in Nebraska. The throw that he threw to Devin Miller that beat Johnny Adams for that essentially game-winning touchdown.
Yes.
Deep down the right side. I mean, you know, Denard Robinson can't make that throw. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make it. Neither does Taylor Martinez. So that makes him, not only is he scary with his feet, and he is, and he's more physical than he was, but when he can hit that throw, I mean, he's not a complete quarterback yet. You'll never really have that in a spread offense because you don't make the decisions yourself like an Andrew Maxwell does, where you make the checks and reads. You look to the sidelines. But in terms of his ability to put the ball where it needs to be, extend plays, and run, I mean, there aren't many players like him. It was he really beat Michigan State, and Michigan State's offense is still, it's a grind. Every first down, everything they do is difficult right now.
Yes. Do you think it's going to continue to be that way, be such a grind for them? I mean, you know, I thought they would slowly but surely get better over the year, but it's taking a little bit longer than I thought through five games that Maxwell and the receivers would be on the same page. They're getting better. They're not there yet, but they're getting better. So what do you think about his progress and the receivers' progress?
Yeah, I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen with a young receiver emerging later in the season, potentially. And I've seen teams like that before where early on you got a smart quarterback, you got a good defense, but you don't have, a dynamic playmaker who's ready to be consistent. And I think that's probably what the case is with some of those young guys and even some of the more experienced guys. They don't seem to have that outside guy right now, that player who can really scare defenses. And I'm not sure of the guys they're playing, that guy exists. And I wrote a column today. I think it's time for them to experiment a little. I think they need to, in these next two games against Indiana and Iowa, find those guys. And Johnny Adams getting a shot at receiver. He still has the longest reception since the Outback Bowl, and it was in the spring game. Be a Lawrence Thomas. I mean, just a load of a back like that, getting some opportunities. Finding ways use Burbridge and Kings, the two freshman wideouts that you've decided to pull the red shirts on. And again, the coaches see who's ready and who's not, and they do know more. But at the end of the year, this defense is going to keep them in the games. I think if they play as hard as they did against Ohio State, they're going to win the next 2 weeks. So you really want to come out of that having discovered a new weapon somewhere, something new that's a wrinkle, something that gives defenses something to think about, something that you feel good about, because you can beat everybody else on your schedule. It's not saying you can't. They may not play anybody better than Ohio State or Notre Dame, but it's going to be every game is going to be difficult. Every game is going to be close, at least against decent competition. And some of those games aren't going to go your way. I think that they just need to find some sort of explosion or creativity in that offense. And I'm not sure if it shows up or not. I think that's going to be the question the rest of the year.
Yes. What do you think about D'Anthony Arnetti? I mean, he didn't get any playing time last week, and he came in with a lot of hype from Tennessee, many people thought that he would be the lead playmaker, and yet he can't even seem to get off the bench now.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why. You hear whispers that, and there's clearly a disconnect in the fact that he thinks he's better than the coaches think he is right now.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, when you talk to him, you understand that much. But beyond that, I don't know if there are further reasons. And in terms of how he's picked up the offense or how he deals with teammates or any of that stuff. I mean, that's, you know, but you'd think there's got to be something more because he's not gotten a great chance. And then when he has, you know, he dropped that pass against Eastern Michigan that was right in his hands. And, you know, if he makes that play, maybe they keep him on the field. Maybe he makes another one. So he hasn't been great, but he hasn't had a lot of opportunities. And I don't, you know, he was a touted guy and doesn't seem to be, you know, the fact that they have him and decided to keep or burn the red shirts or pull them on Kings and Burbridge tells you what they think of him a little bit. And, you know, I just don't know if he's – I don't know what's going on there, but he's certainly not a big part of what they've done to this point.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, because I'm wondering the same thing. What's going on with him? Will he get another chance? It's funny though, you know, Graham. You know, as you know, over the years, you know, you'll see some guys who get all they can drop pass after pass, and they get another chance. Some guys will get that one chance, and they're gone for good. And I'm wondering if he might be one of those guys who get the one chance, doesn't make it, and won't get another chance to prove himself again.
Yeah, and you never. And some guys just don't translate as well as you think they are. There's a big time recruit. So I went to Lansing Sexton. I was in high school. There's a kid of the year behind me by the name of Sean Foster.
Yeah.
And went to Michigan State, played running back a little bit, and then switched to wideout and never really finished there. But you know, I remember Nick Saban. You know, kissed him when he committed. He was a big deal. Came in with Little John Flowers, those two backs together, right behind Cedric Irvin, and great speed. I mean, just track speed. Didn't have that kind of wiggle in his hips, didn't have whatever it took to be a great running back. And, you know, in the right system with that kind of speed and the opportunity, he might have put up some decent yards as a freshman, and maybe that's something similar to Arnett. Not everybody who's a big recruit really pans out. And, to this point, he hasn't done enough to see the field, or there's some greater disconnect somewhere else. And I think that is one of the great questions of the season, and I'm not sure you know, for the time being, we're going to get the real answer, unless it's just as simple as he's just not as good as the guys who are in front of him. But that said, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, guys aren't, you win playing time in practice, but even Mark Antonio's talked about this. Sometimes you got to let the games decide a little bit who plays, and I think these next two games are important for that. There are guys who are great practice players, and there are guys who aren't. You know, there's a guy who beat Michigan State a couple years ago, Dan LeFevre at Central Michigan. If you judged him on practice, he'd never seen the field his entire career. But when he got an opportunity, he's a gamer. And there are guys like that. And we all know that as sports fans. We see that all the time. Guys who just make things happen. And, you know, Drew Stanton, when he was playing well, was much the same way at times. And, I think that, they've got to give some opportunities to guys to make plays in games and put them in positions to make plays.
Okay, got a caller for you. We got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Earl. Beautiful mid-Michigan day.
Yes, it is.
Feels like football. I appreciate your guest coming on. He seems extremely knowledgeable about Michigan State football. But I guess I had two points I'd like to ask him about. Obviously, a disappointing loss. Team that was coming in this year and won 15, 16 straight games at home, and now has lost two. It's a good football team. And I don't know exactly how to phrase this, and I'm not critical. I don't like being overly critical of college players, and I know he's doing his best. But when the field goal kicker Conroy came in, he had a spectacular first year for Michigan State. I don't know what his stats were, but I think as a first year player, maybe as a sophomore, he was all Big Ten. Is good, but that field goal was the difference in the game. And I'm not saying cut the kid or don't play him, and he's obviously the best they have, but you know, as a kid who's been in the program, a fourth-year, fifth-year senior, a 42-yard field goal, or maybe that's not exactly what it is not too much to ask. And quite frankly, that was the difference of the game. And I'm not saying he lost the game, because if it goes across the board, there are 85 kids that all put in enough to win or lose. But I don't feel that kick was asking too much. And I think, you know, we've had a lot of breaks go our way the last couple of years. But is there a confidence problem there? And secondly, I agree that I think Michigan State could very well win the rest of their games, but I guess my concern is this. You know, they have done a decent job on dual-threat quarterbacks. You know, the Golson kid from Notre Dame, I think Braxton Miller has improved a lot. But let's be honest. Denard Robinson is a dual-threat quarterback. Martinez is a dual-threat quarterback. The kid from Northwestern is a dual-threat quarterback. I don't know that any of them are as good or better as the two that they faced, but, you know, as good as the defense plays at times, that is the bugaboo. They seem to be in position. They tackle well. They don't miss tackles. But let's be honest, guys that can both run and pass have given us a hard time this season, and there are three or four guys, those guys like that, still on the schedule. If you could comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Todd.
Yeah, no, absolutely. With Dan Conroy first, you know, he has missed five field goals this year, one each game. I mean, I was joking that they ought to just on the first possession have him attempt an 84-yarder or something and get it out of the way. But he's, you know, after that, he's hitting some deep. He hit a 48-yarder later, and he hit three others. And so, you know, if it's confidence, you don't see that carry on. It's usually the first kick, and then he's hitting three more. So I don't think it's a confidence issue. You know, I don't know what it is. As a college kicker, though, I mean, it's, you don't find a lot of extremely consistent college kickers, and he's been pretty good over time. But I do agree, he's, you know, he's missed one each game, and it's costly, and it's costly because the offense needs it. You know, people can talk about that fumble that was blown dead that might have been a return for a touchdown. You can talk about a lot of what-ifs with this team, and part of that is because they don't have anybody to kind of erase that. They don't have anybody who's a playmaker who just makes up for that. And so you need those 3 points. And don't get me wrong, Ohio State's an excellent defense, and they're not going to face a better run defense than that the rest of the way. You saw what they did when their priority was stopping Le'Veon Bell. In terms of facing a dual-threat quarterback, the only thing I disagree with is, and first of all, dual-threat quarterbacks are difficult because they're dual-threat quarterbacks, if they're true dual-threat quarterbacks. Denard Robinson's not a true dual-threat quarterback. Great running quarterback. Very, very below-average passing quarterback. Taylor Martinez, until this year, was even worse as a passing quarterback. Braxton Miller's at another level as a passer. And but their legs are, especially Robinson, he's electrifying to the point that he gets you off your game, that he can complete some stuff because he's adequate at some level in the passing game. And so that's a problem because of who he is. But they bottled him up the last 2 years pretty well. Certainly, I mean, he presents challenges. That's why he's who he is. He's put up the numbers he has in college and has the reputation he does. But I don't think, put it this way, if Denard Robinson was starting that game for Ohio State instead of Braxton Miller, I believe Michigan State wins. You know, I could be wrong. I was wrong about Braxton Miller. Maybe there's something Denard is found. But, you know, from what I've seen of him even this year, I don't see the mechanics there, the way he throws the ball, the decisions. I don't see him as a true dual-threat quarterback just because he runs the football.
Okay. Do you think it's time, Graham, that maybe Michigan State checks in and maybe tries to recruit a dual-threat type quarterback? I know they've got one on and he's not going to play. Tony Lippett used to be like that. But maybe it's time they go after a truly dual-threat quarterback. Do you think it is that time that they need to have one in their arsenal?
Well, if you run in a spread, you know, it helps. But, you know, if you've got – I mean, Kirk Cousins had a pretty good career. And, you know, he was certainly closer to, you know, Gus Ornstein's feet than he was Denard Robinson. He was not a mover, but a very smart player, you know, understood how to read defenses. And I think if you can find a guy – and Maxwell seems to have that, you know, in a pro-style set who can check into the right plays. And, you know, a lot of runs – when Le'Veon Bell gets 15 yards – sometimes that Andrew Maxwell, who sees something and checks into that play that gets those 15 yards. I mean, Le'Veon obviously does a lot of work in the line and everything, but if you can find a quarterback where you're not looking to the sideline for every check, where you're able to change things at the line of scrimmage, I think that's more valuable. You know, I don't think that's what Michigan State's offensive philosophy is. I don't think they're against mobile quarterbacks. I just think you got to have playmakers somewhere. And they don't have somebody on the outside right now. They don't have that Keyshawn Martin type even. You know, that guy who can really just scare you with speed a little bit, and they need to just kind of an electrifying player. It doesn't have to be at the quarterback. It's got to be somewhere.
Okay. Hey, Graham, I want to thank you for joining me and talking Michigan State football. As you know, I'll give you a call again. We'll talk Michigan State football at another time during the season.
Sounds Sounds great. I'll look forward to it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Graham. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Graham Couch, the columnist from the Lansing State-Journal. The time now, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The Syrian army blanketed rebel fighters with a text message on Thursday, game over. They might well have replied, wishful thinking. The civil war's already dragged on for 18 months, killed tens of thousands, and forced even more to flee to neighboring countries. I'm Neil Conan, the civil war in Syria, plus our weekly read of the opinion page. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather. Our high today is 67, mostly sunny today. A slight chance of overnight showers with a low of 50. Mostly cloudy tomorrow and maybe some rain. Tuesday's high 68. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a good chance of rain and a high of 69.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Now let's talk some more disappointing sports. Disappointing football season as the Lions lost yesterday to Minnesota 20-13. So let's bring in our good friend Dave Burkett and talk about that loss to the Lions. Dave, how you doing, my man? Hey, Dave. Well, see if we I thought we had Dave on, so we're trying to still check with him here, trying to catch up with. He had to step away for a minute, and we'll get him back shortly, and we'll talk some Lions, Detroit Lions football right here. And see what he has to say about the Lions. And he said he had to step away. He says he'll be back in just a sec. Okay. I was thinking that he's saying he's back in just a sec. He'll be back. He's stepping back away from the SEC. That's the way I was looking at that. But I figured it out, and we'll talk with Dave Burkett shortly about the Detroit Lions and back-to-back weeks. Never done before in NFL history. The first time in the NFL that they lost two games back-to-back, had a punt return against them, and, of course, a kickoff return in the last 2 weeks. So that's been something that hasn't been seen in the NFL before, but it is. And I also must tell you that one of my all-time favorite players, his record was tied last week. It was tied as Drew Brees tied finally Johnny Unitas' record of throwing 47 straight touchdown passes in games. The rules have changed so much toward the passing game. It was inevitable that someone would do it. It seemed like someone probably should have done it a long time ago, but no one had done it till now. And thank goodness that Drew Brees did it. And Johnny Unitas, of course, I still consider him the greatest player to ever play the game. And he was the inventor of the two-minute drill. he started that. But right now, let's bring in our good friend and talk a little Lions football, Dave Burkett. Hey, Dave, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Earl? How you doing?
Hey, not doing too bad. And the Lions, though, you know, is it more than just special teams? I mean, they've had week to week, never happened in the NFL before, back-to-back punt returns and back-to-back kickoff returns. So we know they got problems with special teams, but is it just more than special teams? Is that the primary problem?
Well, I think that's one of the big ones. I wouldn't chalk it all up to that. I mean, I think that was the biggest reason why they lost yesterday. But, you know, they can't run the ball consistently, and that was a big issue yesterday.
Yeah.
The offensive line didn't hold up real well, and you know, offensively they're getting off to slow starts. You know, can't seem to punch it in the red zone, and I think defensively they've had trouble stopping, you know, running backs. We saw earlier in the year with Frank Gore. We saw with Adrian Peterson yesterday. So I think the problems are throughout the team right now.
Yes, because if they can't stop the run and they can't run the ball themselves, that's a big issue right there. And, you know, I don't know how they can rectify that one, you know, because if you can't stop the run in the NFL, you're in big trouble. Because even though it's not a running league, but if teams can run the ball, they'll certainly run it down your throat.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think that's what defenses at least are trying to force the Lions to do. They're dropping, you know, 5-6 guys into coverage and making the Lions and beat them with the run, and the Lions haven't been able to do that. Mikel sure had the one good game against Tennessee, but, you know, I think when you take a step back and look at that, he averaged less than 4 yards a carry. He got a few chunks. They got a few first downs that way, but I don't think they were consistent enough, and he never really came out of that that two-deep shell that they were in. And you know, Matt Stafford said that he hasn't seen a blitz basically in 2 weeks. He said they blitzed one time last week, and you're just not getting favorable looks when that's the case.
Geez. And what about Calvin Johnson? I mean, you know, he got popped a couple of times real good, and it's like, we'll let you catch the ball, but boy, when you catch it, you're going to take a big hit.
Right. And, yeah, I know people are getting on him about the drop. I mean, I think Harrison Smith put a good hit on the ball right there to pry that ball loose. But, you know, those are catches that you expect your best receiver to make. So he's not totally without fault. And then obviously Brandon Pettigrew's had his issues with the drops too. So, like I said, it's a team-wide thing for the Lions right now.
It is, and we know it's tough to do, but, you know, there aren't many really good players that you can plug into your lineup that's sitting on the waiver wire. And that's always going to be a problem, you know, trying to get some decent subs in there. Or maybe we'll have to see starters playing special teams. You think that's probably going to be the next possibility? They'll try to bring some of the starters in to play special teams?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think NFL's too dangerous to do that. You don't want to risk somebody, you know, there and lose them. I mean, you know, you see a few guys on special teams right now, DeAndre Levy, Eric Coleman, those were two starters on the punt team. You know, they've used some of their other linebackers in the past. I think one thing that would help Earl is getting healthy, because, you know, if Louis Delmas is back, then John Wemling doesn't have to worry about anything else. And I know he didn't, you know, play on defense much yesterday, but, you know, just the fact that he's still repping there in practice, you know, I think if you get all of your defensive linemen back, then maybe you can, you know, you don't have to. Willie Young can be just a special teams player. Ronnell Lewis can be just a special teams player, and obviously Willie has the potential to be more, but he's important on kick return. You know, he's a guy that showed that he can block some punts during the preseason, so if he can take on more of a role there, I think if the Lions start to get a little bit healthy, that'll help the teams.
Oh, that would certainly help them. Yes, they definitely need to get healthier. What else can the Lions do when you look at the team and you look at how they've been playing? You know, what else do you see that maybe the Lions can do to help themselves? Because they can't. The strength of the team was supposed to be that defensive front, and they haven't been performing as well as they have been. So what do you think they need to do?
Yeah, I think the defensive line actually played pretty good yesterday. I mean, obviously they didn't play well enough to win, but, you know, I think they made some plays. They were in that backfield a lot. Minnesota, Christian Ponder threw for, I think it was 111 yards, and the Vikings didn't score a touchdown on offense. They had three field goal tries and made two of them. So I don't think defense was the biggest problem yesterday. I think what the Lions really need to do is, you know, somehow strike a little bit quicker on offense, make teams adjust to their strengths and maybe play away from their weaknesses. You know, that's what defenses are making the Lions do right now. And if they could, say, get up two touchdowns on the Vikings, then the Vikings don't have Adrian Peterson that they can go to quite as much. You know, they need to air it out a little bit, and that's something that favors the Lions both because of their passing game and because of their pass rush.
Yeah, the Lions had to you know, they couldn't do much on the ground game. They couldn't get Mikel Ashore going. So what do you see with that, with him? You know, I thought he was going to be, you know, a big-time running back for them for a long time, but he couldn't even get off in his second game as a starter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I think it's too early. I said this last week, it's too early to anoint him as somebody that's solving all their running game problems, and it's too early to write him off, you know, as you know, having, you know, some issues. I mean, I think yesterday the problems were due to the offensive line as much as anything. I think Lashore runs hard, but, you know, I think he's best in you know, kind of a split carry system or a split back system. I mean, if they had Javid Best back to go along with Mikel Ashore, then that running game looks totally different. Then you have a weapon that's a perimeter that creates problems, and you have Lashore kind of a pounder, you know, who can give defensive fits up the gut. So I think the Lions are still piecing things together in the backfield.
Yes. Now, what do you see from the Lions' offensive line? Do you see Retief, you know, the Lions' first round draft pick getting more playing time? What's going to happen with the line? Or I know they've got a couple of Lions they're very high on. They think they can probably plug in. So, what do you see happening with them?
No, I mean, I guess Riley Reiff, that's something that the Lions have to explore right now. whether he might be able to give the offensive line a boost in the run game. But, you know, Earl, I'm not sure. You know, they've been content to go with their five vets so far, and you know, I'm not sure that they're going to go away from that. They have a bye week here that they can work on some things, that they can reevaluate some things, see if that's necessary, and maybe they'll do that. But, you know, I don't know anything right at this point that Riley Reiff is going to be in for more playing time over the next 12 weeks.
Yeah, when you look at the overall at the Lions, you know, and you see they've got to make some changes. But in the NFL, you know, you can't make a lot, not like college where you can make a lot of, you know, radical changes and such. In the NFL, you have to make really subtle changes, maybe some very minor things that can help them. You know, you can't blow your offense up and, you know, and put in a pro new offense. You might add a couple of plays, but it's a different animal when you talk about the Lions and trying to improve their team. I know people have been calling me all since the beginning of the season about special teams play. I say, yeah, it'll probably be a problem, but you have to look, you know, you have to wait to see it happen, and then they have to go from here. They're going to have to make adjustments there, make adjustments in offense. So how do you see it? I know that you probably said they've got to make some minor changes or subtle changes, that is. So how do you see the Lions doing that, making the changes that could help them?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that there's a ton out to do in terms of, you know, impact guys on the wire or trades to be had or anything like that. I think basically, Earl, and you know how this is, it's the margin for error in the NFL is so small.
Yes.
And the difference between, you know, these teams in kind of the middle tier here. You know, I think everybody forgets. Everybody thought the Lions coming off a playoff berth, they're an elite team. No, they weren't an elite team yet. I think, you know, if you took a step back, you could, you know, realize that they had a good offense, but they still had a lot of holes on defense. They still had some holes on offense, too, so they weren't an elite team. And they didn't do much to get better this year. So their margin for error compared to some of these other teams in that middle tier is slim, and this is what's coming back to bite them now. You can't let, you know, two touchdown returns in a game or stand a chance to win that. You can't throw three interceptions in a game most weeks, and then the Lions were forcing it to in week one. Otherwise, they'd be looking at 0-4 right now.
Now, what do you say? What is your prognosis, I guess, on Nick Fairley? How is he playing? And do you see him maybe being moved in or out of the lineup or getting more playing time? How do you look at the play of Nick Fairley so far?
Well, he's got to play right now. I mean, Corey Williams out for a couple weeks. He had arthroscopic knee surgery last Tuesday. You know, Sammy Hill got the start. Sammy's playing better than Nick right now. I mean, I think Nick's still, he's a little bit quicker than Sammy. You know, probably a better pass rusher, but Sammy's a better player overall. But the Lions need a little bit more out of Nick Fairley than they've been getting. You know, 20 games into his NFL career, he's got two sacks. And granted, he was dealing with the foot injury last year, missed some time. But, you know, I think everybody expects a little bit more out of Nick at this point.
Yes, and they certainly need him and a few others. You know, we talked about, you know, we've talked a lot about the defensive backfield, and how do you see that as progressing at this point in time? Do they still need that defensive backfield help? How do you look at that now?
Same old, same old. I mean,
same
you know, again, they're expecting Delmas to come back here after the bye, perhaps for that first game against the Eagles, if not them, then shortly after. I think it probably will be that week. But, yeah, you know, look, even when Delmas was on the field, you know, last year, they weren't great. I mean, he helps them. You know, he's the best athlete that they have at safety, but they still have some issues back there. I mean, I think the two big pass plays yesterday were both pass interference penalties on Bill Bentley. So, you know, they kind of are who they are at this stage. They're going to have to address that situation in the offseason and just kind of make do with what they have right now.
Wow, you don't seem too optimistic about the Lions' chances, Dave.
No, I mean, you know, I don't think they're much different than what we thought, you know, heading into the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, look, they're a team that can score with anybody, but right now they're not scoring with anybody. Right now they need to figure some things out because all these teams are playing them the exact same way. They're playing with them in that two-deep shell, and they're making the Lions go piece by piece by piece down the field to beat them, and the Lions haven't found a counter to that yet. They've been a little too content to run the football and, you know, see if they can pick up things that way. And, you know, I think the Lions still have some issues, obviously, in the offensive line, and they have some issues in the back end of their defense, and there's not a whole lot that they can do right now to get better at those. That doesn't preclude them from winning games or making the playoffs. I mean, they did it last year with the same holes, and the offense is good enough so that it can get hot at any time and win some ball games. But, you know, I think they're far from an elite team right now.
Yes, Dave, one thing for sure is, you know, the schedule now starts to get a lot. They played four games that were winnable games, and now the schedule's going to get tough with Philly, and you look at all the teams they got coming up. You know, do you think they can basically do a good job of circumventing this schedule and maybe trying to get a few wins? You know, who would have thought that Arizona would be unbeaten by now? But there's some they've got really some good teams on their schedule in the next month here.
Yeah, I mean, especially these two after the bye. I just wrote a little something on our website earlier that, you know, there's been one team in the Super Bowl era that started 1-5 and then has made the playoffs. That was back in 1970, the Bengals. So if the Lions don't win one of these next two road games against two pretty good teams in the Eagles and Bears, you know, you can just about write their season off. But they got a chance to get a little bit healthy here after the bye and maybe get better, and hopefully they can turn things around.
Yes, I know. I was surprised, Dave, that, you know, they lost to Minnesota, because I thought that was the one team in their division that they had a good chance to beat. I was a little reluctant to think about they could beat Chicago or the Bears. Now the way this season is turning out, it looks like Green Bay could be a winnable game. But that this division is certainly maybe even a little bit tougher than we thought at the first of the year.
Well, Minnesota's better, I think that's for
yes.
sure. You know, we'll see what Chicago is a little bit tonight. They got a good Dallas team. I think Green Bay still, you know, they got hosed by the one officiating call. There's no doubt about that against Seattle. Almost got burned by one yesterday. They still have Aaron Rodgers, who's the best quarterback in the game. So they might be 2-2 right now, but I wouldn't count them out by any means. So nothing's going to be easy for the Lions here over the next few weeks. And like I said, they need to do some serious looking in the mirror right now during this week off. And if they can win one of those next two games, then, you know, I think they still have a shot to make the playoffs.
Hey, Dave, do you think that the running backs, that they maybe should try to adjust the running back, or you think they'll content and they'll just live with what they got?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, there's, again, kind of the same boat. Who are you going to get? You know, there's still some hope that Jahvi Best will be back after week six in the bye, or he can come off the pup list then. So, you know, if that happens, then their running game looks dramatically different. So, in the interim, it's going to be a lot of McKellister. Like Bell might have carved out a little bit better role for himself. He's played well when he's been on the field, but this is still a pass offense, first and second, and they need to get that going.
Yes. Now, do you look at Titus Young and the other young receiver, Ryan Broyles? Do you think they're going to be much help this year? Is it just going to be Pettigrew and Burleson and Calvin? Is that it? Or can they get any help from the young guys?
It's going to be minimal. I mean, Ryan Broyles is, you know, he's a bit player right now. You know, the Lions drafted him for the future as much as anything. In Titus, he's a talented guy who is still coming into his own, still kind of finding his role. I mean, he's still behind Calvin, behind Pettigrew, behind Nate Burleson, and maybe even Tony Scheffler as an option. And you know, so he's not going to put up big numbers, but he needs to be more of a weapon. He needs to catch balls like the one that he dropped yesterday when he's on the field.
Okay. Well, Dave, we know the Lions have got – somehow they've got to get better. They've got the players they've got. They've got to make them better. And that's their job. So he's got a tough job trying to make this team better, isn't he? The coach, yeah.
At this point in the game, I mean, I know Jim Schwartz likes to use the line that there's never a finish line, but – that's kind of why I keep going back to the line roll, that they kind of are what they are right now at this point. You know, there's not a whole lot of changes to be made out there. Maybe they can make a deal, but, you know, the Lions are short a couple draft picks as it is. They gave up one to move up in the draft to get Tahir Whitehead last year. They gave another one for Kevin Barnes, in the preseason this year. So they don't have a lot of ammo to trade either.
Yeah, and Schwartz, I assume he's still safe right now, but we know how fickle the football fans can get. You think the Lions might, the Lions might start calling up for Schwartz's head if they lose a couple more this year, or this season doesn't turn out the way you think it could be, that they could make another playoff run if they fail to make the playoffs? If they don't make the playoffs, do you think then that Schwartz might be they might have to consider making a change?
No, that's premature. I mean, he signed a suspension this offseason. You know, he got him this far. I don't think there's any – I don't think that thought will cross their mind. They like the stability that they have there, and Schwartz is a pretty good coach.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Dave. And it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll talk again, of course. You know, we'll talk about those Lions a little bit further down in the season.
All right, y'all. Sounds good. We'll talk to you.
Okay, talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press talking Lions football. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Pohl with...
For 6 years, Sarah Terry bounced from one doctor's office to another, hoping they could figure out what was wrong with her son. The answer came from a test all but unheard of a decade ago, and until recently, very, very expensive. Whole genome sequencing.
For those of us in the field, it is sort of a holy grail.
Dr. Arthur Beaudet. I'm Neil Conan, the $1,000 genome. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock, right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The high today in the mid-60s and mostly sunny. There's a slight chance of rain overnight with a low of 50. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, a chance of showers. Tuesday's high 68 degrees and mostly cloudy with a good chance of rain expected Wednesday. The high 69. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Let's go back to the phones, and we've got Victor on the line. Victor, how you doing?
Well, at least the Lions aren't going to go 0-16.
Yep, that's right.
I've got a solution to their special teams problem.
Okay.
They need to sign old people like me that are blind on their team so they can watch the running backs running out of the end zone.
they definitely have some problems in special teams, as you know. No secret there.
The only problem we'd have is we couldn't bring our white canes and leader dogs on, to prevent them from running back like that, you know. But, you know, that's what they call, you know, the Americans with Disability Act. Is no benefit to blind people, especially people with disables.
Yeah.
Well, but what do you think about the Tigers? You think? I gave up on them. I did. I'll be honest with you. But you know, it's kind of cool they're in the position they're in.
They are. I mean, I almost started to bail on them, but I reluctantly stuck with them.
Oh, I did. I bailed on them. I did. But you know what? I hope they do tonight. I hope they score about 15 or 20 runs like have been. I think there's been a couple games this year where some team has scored 20 or more runs in a game.
I think Minnesota did that a couple times.
It would be cool for Detroit to break out and do something like that and show their potential.
Well, I don't know if they have those kind of hitters. I mean, we know they've got two big legitimate with Cabrera and Fielder. Those are the best, and Aaron Jackson. They've got three really legit hitters. After that, you know, it's a pretty suspect lineup.
Wait. Can I make my point? I know you're busy. I know you got a lot of callers. Mm-hmm. But, if Jackson and Barry get on base,
mm-hmm.
both those are base stealers, you know, under the right circumstances.
That's true.
So, if Barry and Jackson were, on first and second, nobody out, mm-hmm. under the right circumstances, if they pulled a double steal, they'd end up on second and third. And then all you need is a simple fly ball to score at least one run, if not two.
Those are things that they are possible. They could happen, but, you know, we don't know if we'll see it happen, but it could happen.
No,
certainly.
It won't because you know, it's just but that's what they call small ball, I think. But who do I know? Just because I got lucky enough to meet Ernie Harwell and remember Joe Sparma?
Pitcher
Joe Sparma?
Yep. He was a good pitcher.
I was at the School for the Blind. We went to a Cub Scouts. We went to a game early in the year, and then our family went back the same year, in August. And Joe Sparma came up and talked to me. You know, he wasn't pitching that day, but he recognized me in the crowd and came up and talked to me.
Yeah, that's good. Hey.
So, I mean, I've been lucky enough to be around a lot of great
athletes
and stuff like that. And you know what? Like I told you, man, I appreciate the fact that you take my phone calls. And hopefully I've added something to this show because, I mean, you know, you are very good at what you do, and guess what? I want to meet you in person sometime, and I hope we can make it happen.
Okay, I think so, too. Hey, thanks a lot, Victor. Yeah, so we'll try to get together sometime. I don't know when, but we'll work on it. Hey, I've got another caller on the line. Let's go to Dennis. Hey, Dennis, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Earl?
Okay.
Hey, now, Earl, you know, a few weeks back, I called your show and I broached the topic of knee-jerk reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got young Mr. Couch from the State Journal doing the same damn thing, Earl. Now, I like the guy. He has a really clear and bright writing style. He's got a sense of humor. He's a local guy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to discourage him. I want to encourage him. He's a good young writer. But, you know, when you come on the air and you start spouting opinions, at least base them on facts. Not one game knee-jerk reaction. You know, two things he said that really stood out to me. He said that Martinez and Robinson aren't dual-threat quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, just said that as if it was factual and there's a solid foundation on which to base that statement. And then he said Miller made throws that Robinson and Martinez cannot make. Well, let's start with that one first of all. I've seen Robinson play almost every game he's ever played in Michigan, and I've seen him make throws down the sideline, the rainbow bomb to a receiver for a touchdown. I've seen it with my own eyes. So me having witnessed that means it is possible he can do it. He may not do it enough. He may not do it with a high percentage or accuracy,
yeah,
but he can do it. And then this thing about dual threat. Earl, last year, Robinson led the Big Ten in total offense, passing for over 2,000 yards, rushing for over 1,000. By the way, Miller and Martinez were second and third. So if you're going to talk about a dual threat quarterback and use Miller as your standard, you would have to concede then that Martinez and Robinson exceed Miller in being a dual-threat quarterback. And, okay, that was last year. Miller was a freshman. Martinez and Robinson were juniors. Even this year, Earl, Robinson is passing for 209 yards per game. Miller's 186 per game. And rushing, they're both about the same, about 115 yards a game. So it's not my point to say that Miller's better than Robinson or Martinez or he's not as good. It's just this, you know, this statement as if it's fact that one is a dual threat and the other two are not because you happen to witness a game where he had a great game, which Miller did. He had a great game against, yeah, Michigan State. Without his play, they certainly don't beat Michigan State. But let's not make a snap judgment and put Miller into the dual threat Hall of Fame and extrapolate that performance to the rest of the season. We'll see.
Yeah,
I've seen Miller earlier this year look like garbage, and he may have some games where he looks like garbage again in the Big Ten. Then again, he could play that way for the rest of the year. But let's stop with the snap judgments, Mr. Sports Writers out there, and stop playing the fans for dummies because we watch ball games too. That's all I got, Earl.
Okay. Sounds right, good, man. Dennis. Yeah, we'll talk to you later, my friend. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Dennis talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoon. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, let's go over to Toronto, Canada right now and talk with Jody. Jody, how you doing?
Hey, Earl. How you doing, man?
Okay, my man.
Good, good, good to hear your voice. I listen to you guys up here, man. You know, the game Saturday, they had a lot of opportunities,
yep,
to win. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, are probably down, and, you know, because the expectations early were so high, you know,
yeah,
as far as the number 10 team and all that. But, you know, they lost a lot of players as far as a quarterback, some playmakers, you know,
mm-hmm,
you know, Martin and Cunningham and Nichols, and, you know, they lost some guys who, you know, you can throw the ball downfield and depend on them to go get it, you know. The younger guys, you know, I thought they played fairly well, Mumphrey and, you know, Leffert. I thought they didn't, you know, didn't do,
yeah,
bad Saturday.
Yeah.
I thought the biggest issue was that, you know, with the young offensive line or the offensive line that's not strong as big as the Buckeyes, it's become, you know, sumo wrestling now as far as offensive line play because kids can't run.
Yeah, that's true. They can't run much these days. And, I was impressed with Ohio State's deep front because they didn't let Le'Veon Bell away. I mean, every time he got a little bit of space, somebody would grab him around the ankles. He just didn't get much room to run.
Yeah, you know, they stopped him from running, and I think, you know, that you know, with the game now being, you know, a lot of pushing, you know, up front and that kind of thing, it's kind of, you know, trying to, you know, move, you know, get guys, motion going one way, and then you cut back against the grain and all that. You know, the,
yeah,
game is different. It's not a power game like it used to be where, you know, you're sticking that head, that facing the numbers and using your head to ram people off, you know, off the ball. You know, so, you know, it's a different world. But, you know, I just think that, you know, the line play, what I do see, and it's always been concerning when I look at it, is the footwork.
Yeah.
You know, having played line, you know, I see footwork, and a lot of times when guys aren't able to shuffle their feet in those types of things, and, you know, when a guy goes, does that swim move or that arm under move to get free, you know, you like to think that a kid has played basketball or something to where he understands to just shuffle his feet and stay in position and pop him, but you see a lot of guys leaning forward out of position so they get beat so often. You know, I guess maybe I'm doing some line teaching, but you know what I mean. But a lot of that happens, I think, because, too, a couple of things. This is what I really want to say is that, you know, at the early age when you start to learn to do those things, you have to have somebody who's a little more fundamentally sound. It's not a knock on the little league coaches, because a lot of them are coaching for free, and they may not have the knowledge of basic little things that you learn from playing at the other levels, you know, your head placement, your hand placement, foot placement, you know. So as kids grow up, they learn those bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coaches have to take years to kind of improve that because, you know, like I say, you might be learning by guys who enjoy the game, but they may not know the, you know, the fundamentals of the line play and the fundamentals of those types of things.
Yeah, because usually linemen these days, either they're good run blockers or pass blockers. You don't see too many that can do both very well. You know, one, I see guys out there excelling at run blocking in high school, excelling at just pass protection, but very rarely do I see any that are good at doing both. And when you get to the college level, you need to be, but, you know, a lot of these guys, when I see them come through Michigan State, they're usually good at one or the other. They it's just going to take time to learn, as you know. It just takes time to learn how to play an offensive line. It might take years for some of them to get the drop on some of the subtle things that you need to do.
And, you know, another thing that you don't see anymore is you don't see the big fellas playing basketball.
Right.
So, you know, when you had guys that, you know, back in the olden days, as guy my kids tell me, you know, the whole offensive line played high school basketball. You know, when it came to Michigan State, everybody had some basketball background, so they knew things, how to move your feet, how to slide, how to shuffle, because it was the defensive drill, you know, pass blocking, keeping the guy in front of you. But so many kids now, they're big, so somebody steers them toward a sport because of the monetary value, scholarships, or those things. So you get some kids who may not, you know how to actually play the position.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you. We see a lot more of that these days, and it'll probably get a lot more. I mean, just talking with Dennis, you know, we look at the dual threat quarterbacks. We don't see a lot of dual threat quarterbacks around these days. Maybe there should be more of them. Like I asked Graham Couch there, should Michigan State start recruiting these dual threat quarterbacks? And we just don't see a lot of versatility these days. It's like you start to learn one thing, and if you do it well, you know, guys will go with it for the long haul. If they grasp onto something and they can do it well, they'll stick to it.
You know, I heard one thing a few years ago about the kids learning something. You know, what happens nowadays, and I think you even mentioned it on your show a few times, is they want to see what they've done well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like kids need to be constantly patted on the back and told what you've done well. Maybe that's just the society we're creating. But, and we were taught, you know, okay, yeah, you were supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So when you did something well, that was the expectation.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
You know, if you made the catch, you know, that's what you were supposed to do.
Right.
If you didn't make the catch or you didn't make the block, you had your chance. Don't complain about not getting on the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we were, you know what I mean?
So
everybody, it's a sad thing to say, but you were sitting there hoping the guy in front of you twisted an ankle or something so you could play.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like, okay, I'll drop a pass, but that's all right, next week I'm still playing, or I miss a block or this or that. You know, you didn't know what mistake was going to be your last.
Yeah.
So, you know, you always were playing, you know, playing at a level to where you were trying not to make any kind of mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see that today. That's quite prevalent out there with the college kids today. You know, they know they're going to play. I mean, they're playing 8 to 9 linemen on the offensive line. If you got that many and they're good, you gave them a scholarship, so they must be good enough to play. And so, consequently, you're playing 8 to 9 guys on scholarship during a game. Scholarship players, they're supposed to be good enough to play. You know, if you get to a point where you only got 4 or 5 supposedly good ones, then that's all you'll play. But we're seeing more more and more these days, everybody gets a little shot at the game. Whether they're hurt or not, they'll get a limited looks at, on the playing field.
Yeah, everybody's getting some time. It's like, yeah. You know, I guess we have so many people we have to make happy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you got to pick. Yeah, thanks a lot, Jody.
All
yeah,
right, I'll talk to you about it.
Okay, yeah, you got to make all these parents happy that they sent their kids to the school and they didn't send them there to sit on the bench. They sent them there to play. Yeah, Aaron, now what do you think about that? You heard Jody there. You know, all these kids today, a lot of them think they should play. They should get playing time, even if they aren't as good as they think they are. People are still thinking that their kids are good enough to play at that level because they got a scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out of high school for a little while, but you know, I guess when I was there, there was a handful of parents that wanted their kids to play. I mean, if you think about it, how much time and effort it is for a parent to take them, pick them up, take them to practices. Nowadays, practices are probably longer than it was when I was in high school. All the weight training that you got to do, all the off-season stuff now that players do, that's a lot of toll on the parents. Well, the parents want to pay off for that, and the payoff is playing in the games. Well, if their kids don't play in the games, well, what the heck was all that effort for?
And especially, in our area of play to pay, you have to play, a fee, of course, to get your kid. And they all think, hey, we're paying $100 to play or $200 to play. You should get playing time, even though that puts the coach in a higher place, because if the kid is just on the team, he really may not know how to play. The parents expect that they should be getting some playing time anyway.
Right. Yep. No, that's true. But, on the other side of the coin, I would argue that there's a lot more, though, of parents who understand that it isn't about the wins or losses. It's about learning life values and those kind of things that they understand. I think there's a good amount of parents that understand it's sports aren't the same maybe when they were in high school or, whatever the case is, or even in college. Things have completely changed for sure. But I think a lot of parents understand that, and they try to instill into their children that it's not about the wins or losses. It's about creating friendships, leadership roles, learning life values and those kind of things. But at the same time, I think it's also, I think it's gotten worse in the sense of what we just mentioned is, parents want their kids to play, and there's a lot of kids that, frankly, they can't play.
Yeah, true.
They're, the world population, the U.S. population is getting bigger, so... and people try out for teams and, that's just, people have to accept it.
Yep. And we see that, especially in high schools today, so many kids can't play, but parents think that their kid is really good and they should play. And if they're playing an activity fee, or a student fee to play, most of those parents definitely think their kid should be playing, almost regardless of whether they're good or not, they should play and because they're paying this fee.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think a lot of it has to come down to the parents and, making the kids realize, like, if you want to be better than the person that has your seat,
right,
has your position, well, practice, work harder, get better. That's just the reality of it. If you're not willing to put in the work, you can't be handed things. So much nowadays, people my age believe they're entitled to many things because things come so easily to them. But you work hard for it and you'll get that spot on the team.
Oh, that's for sure. Well, hey, we'd like to give you more of a show today, but we're out of time. we're running short on time, but I want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling. And come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way from 1:05 to 2 o'clock each and every day. And so give us a call tomorrow right here at 1:05 to call us up, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. And we come your way each and every day from 1:05 to 2 o'clock. So we'll look forward to seeing from you and hearing from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. And we'll see you tomorrow right here.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.